Remaker's Mark Podcast, Episode 5, Clue. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Episode 5 of the Remaker's Mark Podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing the murder mystery movie Clue. With me, as always, are my panelists, Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you today? And what's your favorite board game?
Fabulous, thank you. And Strip Solitaire.
Mmm. Wow. I don't know what the board is like.
There's but that's, no board.
It's naked.
Interesting. That's a disturbing answer. Also with me today is Jeremy Nilsson. How are you, and what's your favorite board game?
I am doing well. My favorite board game is the classic Risk.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Also with me is Lee Hochstarg. Lee, how are you today, and what's your favorite board game?
I'm doing well, and my favorite is Star Wars Trivial Pursuit.
Mm, nice. That's a good one. And then finally, Mark Josting. How are you today? And what about you? What's your favorite board game?
Very well, thank you. And I have to go with Scrabble.
Mm, great. Boy, that's hard. Man. So I'm Kyle Delahunt. I'll be your host this fine evening / day. Fill in the time as appropriate for your listening habits. And I would say my favorite board game is probably, I'm going to totally cop out and say a tie between Star Wars Trivial Pursuit and Scrabble, although probably Scrabble. So again, we want to just welcome you here to the Remaker's Mark podcast. Thanks for tuning in, as it were. I don't think you actually tune anything with a podcast, but you get the idea. We want to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for their promotional consideration. Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest held at the Triple Rock Social Club here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, hosted by Nell's Lens of Huge Theater. They have drink specials from Tallgrass Brewing, and players can win retro games and systems from Level Up Games, as well as free show tickets and free drinks from the Triple Rock. To find out more, check them out at tipsypixels.com and hit them up on Twitter at twitter.com/tipsypixels. So, today we are talking about Clue. But before we do so, I want to just give a quick reminder that our shows are out there and available on iTunes, both Remaker's Mark and the Nerd Night Minnesota podcast. So if you wish to subscribe, you can do so there. And if you would like to leave some feedback for us, that would be great. Just letting us know how we're doing. And if you could rate it on iTunes, that would be fantastic. And also, you can find out more information about the network, the Math is Hard Network, and our various properties at our website, mathishard.net. So, let's talk about Clue, huh?
Mm-hmm. So, right on.
Yeah, we're very excited about this. We were just talking about it, and we're all extremely excited to talk about Clue, as we should be. It's a great movie. So, some feedback we got was that we, for those people who maybe haven't seen the movies we discuss, we don't want them to be left out. We want them to feel welcome and that they can hear about it and kind of know what's going on. So, one of the things we're going to introduce into the summary side of things is actually a plot summary. So, Clue, set in 1954 against the backdrop of McCarthyism, is six strangers who are invited to a party in a secluded New England mansion. They are met by the house butler, Wadsworth, who reminds them each that they have been given pseudonyms to protect their true identity. Over dinner, the truth comes out that all of the guests are being blackmailed to hide their secrets. Accusations fly, and the body count rises in this live-action murder mystery whodunit, culminating in three, count them, three different endings. So that's what Clue is all about. Clue was made in 1985. It's based on the Parker Brothers and Hasbro board game Clue, also known as Cluedo, apparently, in other countries, which I didn't know. I think it started out in England as Cluedo. C-L-U-E-D-O. I have no idea what that is.
It's a metric thing.
I could speak to that really fast. The original version of Clue was different than the version that we have today. And it was a lot weirder and harder, but go on.
Interesting.
Yep.
Wow. I thought it was pretty hard to begin with, so that's saying something. So this, in fact, was the first movie based on a board game. I guess that's notable. I don't know. I guess, you know, I would see it as a much more entertaining movie as opposed to being known as a movie based on a board game, but that's okay. It was directed by Jonathan Lynn, and was written by Jonathan Lynn and John Landis of Blues Brothers, Animal House, and the Video to Thriller fame. Jonathan Lynn, the director, is primarily known for thrillers and whodunit movies in the UK. So this is very much in line with that history. Andy and Lee, you both had pretty interesting coincidences about this movie. Do you want to chime in and talk about that a little bit?
You go first, Lee.
Sure. Well, I remember seeing a lot of the I remember the TV ads pretty vividly, just really playing up the three different endings and how it would, each commercial would end with whodunit. It depends upon where you see it. So I thought that was a really cool marketing device. I didn't actually see this in the theater because it never came to my hometown. Having the one theater in town, we just got like the really big blockbuster movies there. Nothing like this. A friend of mine did see it and he told me all about it and couldn't wait to see it when it came out on video. And the bonus for the video was it included all three endings. So I thought that was pretty cool.
This was also one of the first sleepover movies that I remember seeing. And I think it was actually the first birthday party sleepover that I was a part of. So it was very exciting in that sense that you got to stay up really late. You got to eat a bunch of Doritos and drink a bunch of Mountain Dew, which I never had at home. So I was very excited about that. But yeah, I remember watching this and just being fascinated by the fact that there could be three different endings. That was a concept to me as a wee little, not very intelligent child that it blew my mind. So this is one that stuck in my craw from an early age.
It's funny how those memories stick, like your first sleepover movie. I just think that's fantastic. I don't remember what mine was.
It was this one and Labyrinth for me. Those are my two first ones.
Mine was nice. Three Amigos.
Oh, wow. That's a heck of a start.
That's a good one.
I like it. Yeah, I remember my first one I watched. The only thing I remember was the Heaven is a Place on Earth video by Belinda Carlisle. So take that as you will.
You had a crappy sleepover.
And he had nightmares.
It's true. Hey, now that was a good song. I like that song. And a tie-in, actually, to the Singing Telegram, who we'll discuss later.
There we go.
Rather indirectly, but we'll take it. So, well, thank you for your history, gentlemen. That's good to hear. Thanks. As most of you know, if you're familiar with the Remakers Mark podcast, the first half of all of our episodes, the episodes are split into two parts. This first part, we talk about how we would recast the movie. And because Clue is so casting heavy, we're doing it just a little bit differently than we usually do. So it's going to be all major characters in the first part. We're going to save the minor characters, and there's actually going to be more major characters this time. The first couple we're going to try to go through pretty quickly, and then the rest we're going to take just a little bit more time with. But there will be seven major characters discussed in this episode, so buckle up, get ready, and we're going to start here with the Colonel Mustard character. And Andy, I believe you are talking about Colonel Mustard first.
I am. Colonel Mustard is my favorite character in the board game, and unfortunately not the movie. He was originally played by Martin Mull, a very talented and an accomplished actor in his own right. Colonel Mustard is a war profiteer. Or is he? And he holds a top secret position at the Pentagon working on the new fusion bomb. Or does he? He also refers to his deceased, possibly diseased also, parents as Mommy and Daddy. Or are they really dead? He's everyone's favorite condiment-themed character. He's Colonel Mustard. I went on a little different route than originally played by Martin Mull. Martin Mull plays him in a very kind of blundering, blustering, more or less incompetent kind of a guy.
Wadsworth, am I right in thinking there is nobody else in this house?
No.
Then there is someone else in this house.
No, sorry, I said no meaning yes.
No meaning yes? Look, I want a straight answer. Is there someone else or isn't there, yes or no?
No.
No, there is or no, there isn't?
Yes.
Which I think is funny for the purposes of the movie, but I wanted someone who could play it a little more, actually someone who looked like a colonel. Martin Mull does not look like a colonel to me, nor does the character. The costumes in the movie do not make you think that Colonel Mustard is an actual colonel. So I opted for a very accomplished actor who I think everyone can immediately see as Colonel Mustard, Mr. J.K. Simmons.
He is
very nice.
Well known in many roles. He is currently featured prominently as the professor of sorts for the University of Farmers commercials. He was Juno's father in the movie Juno. He played, help me out here, the publisher in the Spider-Man movies.
J. Jonah Jameson.
And he was
shame
perfect.
On you, Andy Wicks.
Boom. Brain fart there. Sorry. But he was fantastic in that role. And I think that he could play the colonel a little more believably, as, you know, he could pull off that kind of, I think, military bluster and, you know, protocol and everything like that while still being pretty dang funny. So that was my pick, J.K. Simmons. Who is next? I believe Jer.
I like it.
Thank you.
I chose a similar character. I was looking for somebody that would had the comic chops, but also had some air of authority to him. I went with Alec Baldwin.
Mm.
Nice.
I like that one.
Largely because of his character from 30 Rock. Just this powerful executive that's got an air of authority to him, and but also is funny. And I've always thought Alec Baldwin was funny back into the 80s when he was hosting Saturday Night Live every other week, and he was one of the better hosts they've ever had. So that's who I went with.
I like that pick also because I think Alec Baldwin can play the kind of blustering but a little bit incompetent executive as well.
Exactly right.
Like he thinks he's in charge, but everything else is really happening despite him.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. Well done.
He can bluster with the best of them.
He really can.
Yep. Mark?
Well, yeah, I too wanted to get a little bit more authority in my Colonel Mustard, and so I went with Greg Kinnear.
Nice. Captain Amazing himself.
Captain Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we in Mystery Men, we saw him as Captain Amazing do the superhero shtick, and I just love it when he starts out as big and heroic and then kind of crumbles. He does it so well, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for him to do more of that.
I
wouldn't begrudge him the opportunity.
I would. I really wish that had the Captain Amazing character really caught on, the "Oh dang" catchphrase really really had some potential.
Moron.
Yeah, just the passing out saying "Oh dang," it's just so good.
So good. Lee, it's to you.
Well, I wanted someone who could really pull off ex-military, like a retired colonel of some kind, and someone who's got maybe a darker sense of humor and could also play that sort of coward, I guess, that Colonel Mustard turns out to be. And I went with Tim Roth. Solely on his work with Quentin Tarantino, because every time he's in a Tarantino movie, it's not meant to be funny, but at times it is in a very dark way, and that's what I like about him.
Yeah, in Tarantino movies, he never gives it up. Like he always gives it his all, and not in an annoying way, but in a way where it's like he lets the script speak for itself. You know, like I think so much of Tarantino's funniness is the dialogue. Yeah. It's not how it's delivered. You know, the delivery almost betrays it, but it's just the circumstances around it. And he just, you know, he doesn't do anything to lessen the dialogue. He just makes it exactly how it should be. So yeah, I dig that.
And he can do a flawless American accent. I've heard it. So, Kyle, you're next.
All right. Well, I instead of trying to buck the trend of Martin Mull's performance, which I thought was just really flat and kind of ineffective and not terribly great, I decided to stick with that style, although someone who could do it a little bit differently and a little bit more menacing. I went with John Slattery, who's in Mad Men. He plays the, I think it's Roger Sterling, I believe. Silvery hair.
Yep.
I think he could do that cold. I think he could have the quietness that Colonel Mustard has, and it would come off as more menacing than bumbling. That's my hope for that, at least. So that's why I went with Mr. Slattery.
He would have to dial up the comedy a little bit, I think, based on, and this is purely based on just his role in Mad Men, but I think he could do it. I think that he would be very funny. It'd be like a very subtle sort of comedy, but more heavy on the incompetence, maybe. I don't know. That's how I would see it.
Yep, I could see that. All right, so for Colonel Mustard, we flew through that one. Well done, gentlemen. Andy chose J.K. Simmons. Jer chose Alec Baldwin. Mark chose Greg Kinnear. Lee chose Tim Roth. And I chose John Slattery. Up next on our lightning round here is Miss Scarlet. Lee, do you want to talk about Ms. Scarlet?
Yes, Miss Scarlet is the conniving madam who has made her living via the world's oldest profession, not carpentry. She has no use for men other than to serve her own selfish interests, and will even go so far as murder to get what she wants. My pick, this was the first one I cast. Then I started to waver on it a little bit and did a little more digging and came up with someone who was really well known for this type of role in the 80s. She's a little older now, but I don't think it really matters because I picked Morgan Fairchild.
Oh,
and that's awesome. Wow. I think she comes off as significantly older than Leslie Ann Warren originally was, but I think that could actually be a big strength. You know, it seemed weird that Leslie Ann Warren was running this high stakes operation. Mm-hmm. You know, like
yeah.
it seemed like a little bit of a stretch from that regard. So I think having someone that is a bit more established, a little bit older, I wonder if it would be too much, but I think that could be part of it too. So yeah, I think that's interesting.
I think it would work very well. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in the original, Yvette is sort of the sexy one that is, you know, really distracting to the guys. I think in the remake, that could be shifted to Miss Scarlet. And I think that Morgan Fairchild, even though she's in her 60s now, she doesn't look a day past 40. Yeah, I've seen
quite recent fetching.
Yes, I've seen pictures and it's yeah, she does not look 63.
I can say with great confidence that my Yvette pick will not allow that, but I appreciate that.
We will see. Kyle, you're next.
Yeah, so I wanted to get someone who almost had a weight beyond their years. You know, I mean, again, talking about how it seemed a stretch that a character that's young, and it's not like she was 20 something, but it just seemed like it was too much for her to reign over at that young of an age. So I went with someone probably about the same age, but someone who could really carry that while maintaining a sexiness that I think Leslie Ann Warren kind of tried to do it by virtue of a plunging neckline, but I just didn't think she was sexy really on her own. And I went with Melissa Tomei. Wow.
Very nice.
Let me try this again. Marissa Tomei. Wow. I read very well. Yeah. You know, she just seems much more established and much more grounded than she should be for her years. She always has, even as a younger actress. And I think mm-hmm. that she is very beautiful and very striking as well. So I think she could balance those two things well. Jer, how about you?
Well, I went with a little different direction. I was imagining the role of Miss Scarlet as more of the smoldering temptress than the madam of the brothel that the original sort of portrayed her as. So I went with Scarlett Johansson.
Nice.
She's definitely smoldering.
And her name is Scarlett.
And she's basically I couldn't get past that. I just see that role more as this seductress than what the original movie cast that character as. And so I would like to see that character kind of what Lee said as more of the sexual lead of the film, where the guys are sort of the slack jawed, wide eyed, like around her.
Kind so you wanted to be Jessica Rabbit?
Exactly. No, that's a fair point. I'm looking for more of that from her, where, you know, she's got control because of her sexuality. She's got control because she knows she can manipulate men because of her legs.
Right.
So would you recast that role then to make it so that she's not a madam running a brothel, but rather just a very high end escort who just happens to be really good at conniving?
Yep. No. So, yeah. Something more along those lines. She's not running something from, you know, her glory days. She's in her glory days. She's more of the gal that is working her way around Washington DC or whatever it is on her looks and her charm and her wits and all of that, at the same time. So, almost more of a Catwoman character or even the Natasha Romanoff character from the Avengers movie, where she is submissive until you realize that she's been playing you the whole time.
I like it. That's a good idea. Good way to address it.
Yep. And Mark, you're up next.
Thank you, Jer. So just like Jer, I wanted to pick a redhead, so, you know, to go with the name Scarlet. And
meow.
So I picked Jessica Rabbit. I mean, no, I picked Jenna Fischer.
Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yep, well we done.
I don't think that she's a conventional look for a temptress sort of role, but definitely a beautiful woman, and definitely has pulled off the, the sex object of the film, sort of role. I'm thinking of the Dewey Cox story, Walk Hard.
Oh, also God, in about that. Blades of Glory, she had a little bit of that role too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, and I think she comes off a little bit young for the role of a madam, but really she is getting towards the age that would be retirement for a hooker.
Are you speaking from experience here? Where is this coming from?
I'm looking at her birthday on IMDb, and she's close to 40.
That is around 401k age for a hooker. Yeah,
yeah. I think hookers are vested at that point.
That's like mandatory rules. Retirement age, I think, for that profession.
Yeah,
I'm so confused right now.
And also for pro athletes, by the way.
Very very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. And she looks great for a pro athlete of retirement age.
I like it. It's more along the lines of when you look at the board game. And you look at the character of Miss Scarlet on the board game, it's more of that than it is of the character from the original movie.
Oh, I agree.
Wow, citing the board game box. Nice work.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. I'll do that again.
Awesome.
Okay,
awesome.
Andy, let's hear it.
I chose a better pick. I love
you
doing
did.
That.
Not.
I love doing that. It's so easy. I will admit that my character, I think, at least to me, there's a visual similarity between Leslie Ann Warren's portrayal and my character. But I think that my character could do a little more of a sultry, I think she could pull off the madam role a little better. And I chose Julianne Moore. I think she has the look of like, there's a sexiness to her that's not like a Jessica Rabbit where she's falling out of her dress and everything like that. It's a little more subtle, a little more put together. And I think, like what I would envision a madam to look like.
We'll make sure to tell her.
Not speaking from experience. That. Yeah. Ugh. Dig hole. No, but I think that she could also do the comedic aspects of it that were incorporated into that role very well. She's got a sneaky side to her. She's got I think she could pull off the conniving very, very well.
Yeah. I'm a little bit worried about the comedy from her, but she's done some pretty funny stuff before, and I like the rest of it.
Yeah, and I think of her role as Maude Lebowski a little bit for some of the comedic stuff, where it's almost as if she's a little bit aloof and detached and above it maybe, but I could see her getting dirty and with all the shenanigans that take place in the movie.
Shenanigans.
I think if you smushed her Maude Lebowski character and her character from Boogie Nights and made that into one sort of super character, I think that would be pretty right on for Miss Scarlet.
Amber Waves Lebowski.
Yeah,
there you go.
And I the name is great. I would see her almost as more of a Miss Peacock role, where she's just so quirky and goofy. Like I think Julianne Moore is hilarious.
Oh, but just you wait until I unveil my Mrs. Peacock.
Okay. I'll wait. When you said the name, I'm like, oh, that's a perfect Miss Peacock. That's better than mine. Sure, Miss Carla.
You still have time to steal it.
Yeah, so you could take it.
All right. Maybe I will.
All right.
All right. So for Miss Scarlet, originally played by Leslie Ann Warren, Lee chose Morgan Fairchild. I chose Marissa Tomei. Jer chose Scarlett Johansson. Mark chose Jenna Fisher. And Andy chose Julianne Moore.
I love you, Julianne Moore.
Oh, I do too. I've always loved Julianne Moore. Next one, this will be lightning-ish, is Professor Plum. Mark, I believe you would like to discuss Professor Plum first.
I would. The alliterative Professor Plum enters our film as less of a professor and more of a doctor, although not in that I can legally practice medicine sort of way. The professor is a bit of a lecher and has lost his medical license for doing with his lady patients what doctors aren't allowed to do with their lady patients. So yeah, trying to get that academic sort of thing going and lecherous comedy, I went with Hank Azaria.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Oh, nice.
He could do lecherous very well.
He can. I think I was tagging Mystery Men a little bit, but I was thinking about his role as the Blue Raja in Mystery Men. I think it was what locked this one in for me.
And his character from is it Couples Retreat? No, I don't remember. Where he's sort of the handsome island guy, the trainer.
I know you're thinking of Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston.
Yes, that one, which was a terrible remake of an original movie that was actually pretty decent. The Something Kid.
Well, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he plays more of a dashing, muscly sort of...
Island native sort of guy.
Physical trainer sort of guy, and very, very much full of himself. I could see a little bit of that in there, too. Is it the Comeback Kid? I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
Andy, save us.
I was looking for the movie, and I couldn't find it. I went with someone who I could see easily doing a spot-on impersonation of Christopher Lloyd, the original actor who portrayed Professor Plum, but I wouldn't want him to do it that way. I think he could take it in a different direction in his own and still be very, very funny. I went with Robert Downey Jr.
Wow.
And I think it wouldn't take much mental energy to picture him just playing Christopher Lloyd as Professor Plum. But again, I would like him to go a little bit differently, being, you know, equally as lecherous and bumbling, as unsuccessfully lecherous as Christopher Lloyd played him. But I think he could, I don't know, have a little more gravitas as a former psychiatrist and, you know, World Health Organization professional as he portends to be. So, Robert Downey Jr.
I like that.
Thank you.
I was amazed at how bored I was with Christopher Lloyd's performance.
Yeah,
was
exactly.
Okay, but he's after having known him for being so, you know, just so out there, you know, just so exaggerated in his performance. It was kind of weird to see him in a subdued one, especially in a movie where there's the potential for that, or that kind of allowed for that a little bit. So
I feel like the moments when he did kind of ramp things up a little bit, it wasn't funny. It was just a little bit frenetic. You know what I mean?
Well, this was right in the midst of Taxi, prior to Back to the Future, like when he was really laying the groundwork for that character, wasn't it?
This is post Back to the Future.
This is post Back to the Future.
Was it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, then he sure as hell should have been way crazier than he was.
That's what's so impressive to me about his performance is he is known for those two roles, and then he does this.
He dials it way back. He was really buttoned down, which maybe that was what he was going for, but I feel like the role could have been a lot funnier with his portrayal.
Yeah. So. The only time that I thought it was really spot on is when what was the line? Even Andy, you and I were IMing about it, but it's like, what happened? Oh, the car is scared. That one, I thought that line was so funny.
Why is the car moving? It's
because
frightened.
It's frightened.
Yeah,
that's funny.
That must be it.
Why is the car stopped?
It's frightened.
By the way, to dial it back a little bit, Heartbreak Kid was the movie we were just talking about. Heartbreak Kid. It was a remake of an original.
Good research, Chair.
All right.
You're welcome.
Lee, what do you got?
Well, I wanted an actor who was maybe a little bit, who could play a little bit more condescending version of Professor Plum. Just like, hey, I'm smarter than all of you people, the sort of thing. But it ends up coming around to bite him in the butt because he gets caught initially. So I went with Kevin Kline, and I picked him almost solely on his performance in the movie Dave.
nice. Just because,
you know, he's got the comedy, definitely. He's got a little bit of that physicality that would be needed. And he's got a very sort of dry, sarcastic wit, which I really like, and I think would really work well into this character.
Oh, yeah.
Are you thinking of his portrayal as Dave in Dave, or as the president in the very beginning of Dave? Just curious.
A mixture of both, actually.
Splitting hairs, Andy.
Hey.
I think so.
We have a demanding audience, okay? I'm just helping them out.
He's just giving them what they want.
Just giving them what they want, Jer.
Fine.
So, Jer, who did you have for this character?
Well, Professor Plum actually was the very first character that I cast, and then at the very end, I threw him out and picked a new one. And to be honest, I can't even remember who my original was anymore, because my new pick outshined him so greatly.
Should write this stuff down.
I know. I typed it down and then I deleted it. But my Professor Plum is Rainn Wilson.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one.
Exactly. Awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Rainn Wilson, best known from as Dwight Schrute from The Office. I also, in my envisioning of it, pulled a little bit of his very minor role in the movie Sahara.
I knew that was coming up.
Mm-hmm. I just watched that a couple weeks ago in honor of you guys. It was quite good.
Aw. But no, he could play simultaneously a very smart scientist, but also pull that bumbling humor out without losing the fact that this is a really brilliant guy. I just think that he's the perfect pick for that role.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
So that Professor Plum, Rainn Wilson. Who we got left? Kyle?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so I wanted somebody, again, just a little bit more present than Christopher Lloyd, but someone who, again, has that lecherousness and that sort of shadiness. And I decided to go with Ralph Fiennes. He could do British, he could do American. Wow. It would be, you know, we can kind of sort that out. He could do Voldemort. Yep, exactly. But I think, you know, I think he's got that that demeanor that basically, as the character is described, I think he could fit into that really, really nicely. So, and I think he does well with big casts and lots of different types of dialogue. So yeah, I went with our old friend Ralph Fiennes.
I think you bring up a good point. Sorry, Mark.
Go ahead.
That he would do well with a lot of dialogue. I think he's got a lot of. There's something about his oration that would do well for a movie. That's. I mean, this is a very dialogue heavy movie. It's very dialogue heavy, mm-hmm. and you know, while it does revolve around a lot of physical comedy. But man, you got to keep up with the dialogue really quickly. And I think that he would do well emoting, you know, someone help me out here. Trying to get across the point of the character through words. Talking. He would do well talking. Oh, geez.
He would read the script as it was written.
That's exactly what I'm going for.
All right. So for Professor Plum, originally played by Christopher Lloyd, Mark went with Hank Azaria. Andy went with Robert Downey Jr. Lee went with Kevin Klein. Jer went with Rainn Wilson. And I went with Ralph Fiennes. So moving on, number 4 out of 7 here. So we should be out of here by about Sunday, which is great. The role of Mrs. Peacock. Lee, do you want to announce Mrs. Peacock?
Absolutely. Originally played by Eileen Brennan, possibly the whiniest character in Clue. Mrs. Peacock is quick to point out fault in others and blatantly cast suspicion away from herself. She's the wife of a senator who gets too involved in the underside of politics, which eventually becomes her undoing.
Well, someone's got to break the ice, and it might as well be me. I mean, I'm used to being a hostess. It's part of my husband's work, and it's always difficult when a group of new friends meet together for the first time to get acquainted. So I'm perfectly prepared to start the ball rolling. I mean, I have absolutely no idea what we're doing here, or what I'm doing here, or what this place is about, but I am determined to enjoy myself, and I'm very intrigued, and oh my, this soup's delicious, isn't it?
This was a tough one for me to cast. It was this, I think it was maybe the second to the last one. I couldn't think of anyone. I thought of one actress. I had that one written down for a while, but I changed it just a couple of days ago. Because I wanted someone who could do that sort of, almost panicky type, dialogue. She doesn't sound like she's in control, but at some point in the timeline that where she's the killer, spoiler alert, she becomes really cold and, you know, the tone of her voice just drops and changes. Like, you know, why would I have murdered all the others? And so I went with Amanda Plummer, mostly because of her work in So I Married an Axe Murderer, Pulp Fiction. And I just think she is really great at playing both ends of the spectrum. And she would bring her own brand of crazy to the character.
Yeah, she drives me nuts, but she would be perfect for this. So
yep.
Character itself drives me nuts, so that's why she would be perfect for it.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. Kyle, who did you have for Mrs. Peacock?
You know, this is one that I cast, I think, first, and I don't know where it came from. It just popped into my head magically, and that is Ellen Burstyn, and mostly informed by her performance in Requiem for a Dream, and admittedly, I don't wish for her to be quite so diet pill coked out in Clue as she was in Requiem for a Dream, but I think that she... You wanted to, like, you there was a heart behind this frenetic, scattered performance that was given, and like you wanted to root for that, but at the same time there was just this energy behind her eyes. Her eyes do more acting than the majority of actors or actresses around. I mean, she just has this amazing presence in her eyes, and I would probably, and this is maybe like, I don't know if this is going too off canon or whatever, but like in the way that, you know, when the X-Men movie came around, they didn't have skin tight spandex. They had like leather outfits. I would lose the peacock glasses and the outfit for Mrs. Peacock. So that might be blasphemous. I don't know. We might get some crap for that, but I would like her to just be her and let her acting speak for the role instead of kind of the get up. So that'd be my choice.
The costume for Mrs. Peacock was a little distracting, I think, in the original. Especially with the over-the-topness of the portrayal of it.
She even looks a little bit like Eileen Brennan.
Yeah, I wonder if that was what initially got it, that there was kind of just the physical similarities. But yeah, and then I was like, oh man, she could do that really well.
I think so.
Cool. Jer, how about you? Who did you pick?
Well, I went with a little bit of a younger actress that I think... In today's modern age of film, you slap some prosthetics on her and make her a little bit more of a middle-aged wife of a senator. I think that comic timing-wise, she would be perfect for the role. I went with Kristen Wiig.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I think she just playing herself, I don't think it would work. But like I said, you put her in that role, you give her the goofy fedora, or not the fedora, the glasses and the big feathery stole or whatever else, and make her into that sort of goofy character that it was in the original. And I think from a comic standpoint, she would just milk that to the nines.
Oh, yeah.
If that's an expression.
It's not.
It's not, but
it will be.
It will be now. Everyone tweet, milk it to the nines. Make sure you hashtag me. I think that for my money, she's one of the funnier women out there right now. Maybe not the funniest, but certainly up on the top echelon. So I think she would take that character and really just make it her own.
Yeah, I'm willing to call her the funniest woman in the business today.
Boom.
And she's so versatile.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, Kristen Wiig is who I went with, and I don't remember where in my order I picked her. I think it was somewhere in the middle, but I came up on the name and I'm like, yep, nope, that works. She's not Eileen Brennan. She's not that older Private Benjamin-esque, goofy but loud and brash sort of character, but I think she could create a new type of Miss Peacock that would have the same quirkiness to it. Mark, and your character, which I assume is going to be almost as good as mine.
One can only hope.
Pow.
But yeah, so yeah, I had to start from this point of just hating Eileen Brennan's performance.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah, I didn't think it was particularly funny, and I thought it was irritating pretty much constantly. Yeah, and I think the only point where I kind of liked the performance was the change in demeanor that Lee already described when there's the reveal and she's like, oh yeah, she's the killer, and she changes tones completely, and I think that's pretty effective. But I really wanted this role to be a lot funnier. I wanted Mrs. Peacock to be trying to be high society and pretty much failing at it, and so I went with Joan Cusack.
I like that one.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
I think she would just be hilarious. And well, she often does like bumbling sort of roles, but I think in doing that shtick in this role where she's supposed to be so upper crust, I think would just be that much more effective.
I picture a little bit of her role from School of Rock, where she's supposed to be this uptight principal, but she's got, you know, that's not her nature. She was this rocker chick back in the day, but now she has to be so uptight.
Yeah,
Yeah, I picture a little bit of that. And she is so quirky just in general, just as a person. She just plays quirky so well. That's a good pick. I like it.
She Thanks. Plays nervous very well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great point. Great way to put it.
All right, Andy, the ball's in your court.
I opted for the woman who can really play anything, Meryl Streep.
I knew that was coming.
Oh.
I feel like she could. If really, it only took us 5 episodes to get to Meryl Streep, so and she will appear again. I'm sure.
She's also Wadsworth.
She's also Wadsworth and Mr. Green and my minor character. No, she I think would play the person kind of like Mark said, who's trying to be high society but failing, or maybe is high society based on the fact that she is a senator's wife or diplomat's wife or whatever it is, but just is completely incompetent in that role. And really, really bad at keeping secrets. I think that's the biggest part is that she's got a really big dark secret and she just can't hide it. And it's like watching a train wreck in slow motion with her. You brought up a good point, Kyle, when you were talking about when it's revealed that she does it in that one ending. I think Meryl Streep could do that ending a lot better because she could turn like that into the Devil Wears Prada. And all of a sudden it's mm-hmm. like, oh my God, you know,
turn on a dime, give you 9 cents change.
Exactly. So
nice.
See Meryl Streep, what can't she do? Why didn't you guys all just pick Meryl Streep for everything?
I was actually saying nice to Mark's idiom, but you know what, Kyle? That's cool.
I'm going
to
claim it. I don't care. I'm taking it.
And I'm actually not going to claim it either because I think I got that one from Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
As you do.
Oh, man. So I think we're done. I think we're done. Oh,
that's wow. Just let's just lock it up, put it away right now.
In the can.
Future episode, next episode, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
With Meryl Streep as Monterey Jack.
Yeah. You know what, though? She can play absolutely anything. I mean, it's like casting Katharine Hepburn. It's like she can play anything, or Sir Alec Guinness can play anything. Mm-hmm. So,
I would cast her as The Mansion.
And she would win an Oscar.
Meryl yeah. Streep as Hill House. All right. So for Mrs. Peacock, originally played terribly by Eileen Brennan, Lee chose Amanda Plummer. I chose Ellen Burstyn. Jer chose Kristen Wiig. Mark chose Joan Cusack. And Andy chose Meryl Streep in a last-minute audible. We get one of those per year, so I hope it was a good one.
You know, it's worth it. It's funny how little we think of the original actors who played these roles. I think every single one of the actors so far, somebody has pointed out how bad they were. Why do we like this movie?
Also
so
considering
much?
How much we like this movie, exactly. I think the next couple characters, I think we'll see.
Yeah, the last three will redeem that, I think, in a big way.
The ensemble is better than the sum of its parts.
Well said. Why. Well
there
said,
you go. Yeah. There yes. you go.
Very well done. All right, so next is Mr. Green. As a member of the State Department, Mr. Green manages secrets every day, including a big one of his own. However, he ain't seen nothing yet when it comes to those held by the group gathered at the Hill House. So the Mr. Green character was how Martin Mull as Colonel Mustard was bumbling. The Mr. Green character was bumbling physically, and I loved that. I think that Michael McKean just dove into it quite literally often, and I really appreciated that. I liked the energy that he brought to it. He could be stoic when he was as State Department guy, and then at the end in one of the endings he plays a cop basically, and I thought he did that well. But I just thought the physical energy that he brought to the role really set it apart from all the other ones in that way. I think the only other one would be Wadsworth, which we'll get to. But, I thought the way that he threw himself around was really excellent. And so my choice was really informed by that. So I went with Steve Carell for that. I think he can have that flatness where it'll have a seriousness to it. But I mean, he can do physical and he can do exaggerated the way that Michael McKean did in this role so well. So I went with Mr. Carell for that.
Nice. I had him written down and I deleted him. That's a good pick. I like it.
Thanks.
I do too. I think you're absolutely on the right track with the physical comedy part of that. Everything that everything that I've seen him in speaks to that. So yeah, good pick.
Thanks.
Well, and Michael McKean does such a great job in everything he does, but this role especially, he can be so loud and brash and obnoxious, but at the same time, it's not overpowering. It's still funny when he does it. Mm-hmm. When he gets frantic and then he dials it back down. And the great part about this character of a Mr. Green is that this whole question of his sexuality the whole time and those jokes in and of themselves are pretty funny, but then with the reveal at the end with one of the endings where he's going to go home and sleep with his wife, I could see Steve Carell playing that sort of ambiguous role as well.
I think it's a credit to Michael McKean also that throughout his performance as Mr. Green, at least for me, when the big reveal came at the end of that last ending, I was genuinely surprised. And I think that speaks to how well he played that role, and that everyone else seemed to be kind of, you know, putting up a front to hide their nature. But he really truly seemed to be a bumbling, nervous, kind of just a little bit awkward kind of a guy who, you know, and the fact that he says, right, you know, pretty early on in the movie that he's a homosexual and that's the secret that he's keeping, you know, plays to that. So you're like, oh, well, we already know his secret. No big deal. So then when the big reveal comes at the end, you're like, oh my gosh, didn't see that coming.
Yep. He is so genuine. And I think that, yep, absolutely. Jared, how about you? Who did you pick?
Like I said, I originally had Steve Carell down, but, As I kept thinking and kept brainstorming people, I eventually removed him for a slightly better pick. I went with Thomas Lennon.
Ooh.
Who is, for those that maybe aren't familiar, he was probably best known or is best known for Lieutenant Dangle in Reno 911.
And we remember him fondly from The State.
Yes. And even back before that, the MTV's The State, which may be one of the better skit comedy shows that didn't survive.
Yeah.
I forgot about The State. No, he's bit parts in all kinds of different stuff, and he could play menacing. He could play a little bit of feminine. He could play all sorts of different things in an ambiguous sort of hodgepodge. And I think that he would embody Mr. Green in both the character sense, but also in that physical comedy sense that Michael McKean brought as well.
He has a guest spot on one episode of The League, and it's hilarious.
Yes, maybe my favorite episode of that stupid show.
Stupid? Excuse me?
Oh boy, it's going to be fisticuffs over Skype.
I was fighting words.
Okay.
You mean awesome show.
Awesome show.
We'll have to revisit that at a later date. Maybe. We got three more characters, people. Come on.
So, yeah. So stay that's... sorry. So yeah, that's my pick is Thomas Lennon, and after me is Andy. I will bounce past to you.
Thank you.
Good form.
I appreciate the sports ball metaphor. I also went with someone who I felt could play the kind of bumbling, quiet wallflower of Mr. Green, but yet have a side of him that is unexpected, to say the least. I chose Edward Norton for this role. Although, kind of in hearing the discussions from other people, I'm going to stand behind my pick, but I will acknowledge that there are some really other good picks out there.
You're going to stand far, far behind him, is what you're saying.
I will stand within eyesight of my pick. But I think Edward Norton plays, like in Moonrise Kingdom, for example, he plays kind of this bumbling scoutmaster. You know, he's trying to do well, but is a little bit incompetent. But then you get movies like Fight Club and you can see what he can do, or American History X, or, you know,
Rounders.
So
my favorite.
So
Death to Smoochie.
Death to Smoochie.
That's actually where I was getting a lot of my, I was like, oh, he totally did it in Death to Smoochie.
Yes.
Where he's such a sweetheart in that movie and then kind of snaps at the end. So I opted for Edward Norton.
That's good opting.
Thank you.
I like it.
That's some fine opting.
Fine opting there.
I will always support Edward Norton as a pick for any character.
Yes, thank you.
Mark,
he could play the mansion.
Mark, I will lateral to you.
Thank you. I'm going to play a little bit to the nerd crowd with this one, and I'm going to go with Nathan Fillion.
Ooh,
yeah.
You win.
To our listeners, if you know him as Frank Castle, please, please, please get to know him as Malcolm Reynolds from Firefly and Serenity and as Captain Hammer from Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog.
Yep.
These are not the Hammer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Nathan Fillion is a, you know, he's a, he can be the tough, stern-looking guy, but he also does the kind of the hesitation and the stammering really, really well. And I think in a lot of his stuff, he's done kind of smug, but, and I'd really like to see him pull back and just do a little bit more, naive. And I think that, that would make magic for me, with this Mr. Green role.
Man, I could almost see him as a Colonel Mustard now that you say that.
Mm. I actually had him written down for Professor Plum as well.
He should just play all the guys
and the mansion.
And Meryl Streep should play all the girls.
Wow. That would be an awesome movie.
Going a little Peter Sellers here.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And that's okay.
Indeed.
All right. Lee, a hand pass to you.
Thank you. Well, this was another one that was a little tough for me to cast, but as soon as I thought of this actor, I couldn't waver from it. Thinking about Jer's idea, I went with Ed Helms, actually.
Nice.
I think he can really do comedy, of course, but you know, he could be a little sexually ambiguous too, in a good way. And I think he's just really good at having, you know, the Mr. Green character has sort of an hour and a half long panic attack. And I think that Ed Helms would do that really well.
Totally.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's really good. The only thing I would have a hard time with is him being a cop at the end. I feel like he would be playing cop, whereas I felt like Michael McKean was actually a cop. He could probably do it. That would be the hardest part for me. But otherwise, I really like it.
I thought about that too, but I thought, okay, it's like three lines. So
unless
I think
that
he can do
wasn't
it.
One of the endings.
True. Yeah. I think there's a little foreshadowing there, perhaps. All right. So Mr. Green, I have to say, gentlemen, this is probably my favorite grouping of recasting that we've done, this Mr. Green character. That was just fantastic. So originally played very well by Michael McKean. I chose Steve Carell. Jer chose Thomas Lennon. Andy chose Edward Norton. Mark chose Nathan Fillion. And Lee chose Ed Helms. All right. Next up is Mrs. White. Jer, talk to us about Mrs. White.
Oh, man. Mrs. White, the character from the movie, she's a black widow. She has lost several husbands, the most recent of which is a nuclear physicist, which is the reason why she's brought to the mansion. And in this scenario, she's also dated an illusionist who disappeared under strange circumstances.
He was never a very good illusionist.
Right. So the character is kind of a perpetual marry and take the fortune type of character, the quintessential black widow, played phenomenally by the irreplaceable Madeline Kahn. Mm-hmm. I in looking at recasting, this was the most difficult role because I cannot come up with a single person that could fill the shoes of Madeline Kahn. She's so unique, and she's so from a comic standpoint, she's just there's nobody really like her.
No.
And from Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles with Lili von Stupp, and just all the way through the 80s and even into the 90s and some of her more recent stuff. She's done some voiceover work and things. It's just where do you go from there? So I couldn't think of anything. In order to recast that part, I had to go a little bit different. I was trying to find somebody that was going to play the character play the same type of character, but in a different way. And so what I ultimately ended up with was really who one of my favorite female comedians today. I went with Tina Fey. I think that she would bring a different energy to that character. She could play demure. She could play that quintessential wife of the rich and famous, but then also has that little glint of menace as well. And I think that she could play that up at the same time. So certainly not going to fill the shoes of Madeline Kahn, but I think could bring a different pair of shoes to the ball.
Interesting.
Well put.
Flames.
Umbrage.
On the side of my face. Oh, my God.
Man.
You were jealous that your husband was stooping at that. That's why you killed him, too.
Yes. Yes, I did it. I killed Yvette. I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, breathing, breath, heaving.
Madeline Kahn, I miss you.
Oh, man, yeah. Don't we all? Yeah. You're here, Madeline Kahn.
So indeed. That's who I went with for the role of Mrs. White. And Andy, I will gently hand the baton to you.
Before I say my pick, I have a little umbrage with your pick, Jer.
Bring it on.
Because I think that Tina Fey lacks the bite and an edge that Madeline Kahn brought to the role. I just can't see Tina Fey being that cold. I think when she would try to be that cold, then I would picture something like toilet paper being stuck to her shoe. So that, you know, anytime that she would try to be that cold, something funny would happen to break the mood. I don't know. That's just something. That's what I
appreciate your umbrage. I will de-umbrage it by saying in the movie Baby Mama, which she was in with
Amy Poehler,
who is also one of my favorite female comedians currently running right now. There were several moments in that movie where she turned into the Ice Queen a little bit, and I could see a little bit of just turning off the comedy, turning on the just I don't want to throw out the B word because we do have a family audience, but just that icy cold, like, get out of my life, get out of the house sort of idea. So I could see it a little bit, but I appreciate your umbrage. I will take it cum grano salis, which is Latin for with a grain of salt.
That was an an umbrage servant volley. I like that.
Very nice. I can see Tina Fey as having killed several men. I could see that.
Exactly. Husbands, no less.
Not necessarily her own.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, hers probably. Or others.
Hers or others. That exchange right there, by the way, in that movie between Wadsworth and Mrs. White that should be shown at every acting school as an example of comedic timing.
Yes.
But I digress.
This whole movie should be.
I had to wonder if Tim Curry was actually tagging Lily von Stupp, Madeline Kahn's character from Blazing Saddles, when he says, her husband was stupping Yvette.
Oh, I never caught that. That's brilliant.
Yep, I think so.
That's brilliant.
I think that's a little homage. Yep.
Clever. Wow.
Okay. So this is
Andy, take us home.
This is the second half of my audible. The actress whom I originally selected for Mrs. Peacock, but in hindsight really would make a much better Mrs. White, in my opinion. I chose Jessica Walter. She skews a little older than I think what the character maybe originally called for, but I think that she could play that kind of Cruella de Vil, Ice Queen. She's been married more times than she has fingers on her hands. Kind of a role, and do it without so much as giving you one instance that she gives a dang. So I think that Jessica Walter would be a fabulous choice for the role of Mrs. White.
Andy, can you fill in who Jessica Walter is, since she's not a terribly well-known name?
Jessica Walter is probably maybe most recently best well-known for playing the matriarch in the Bluth family on the Arrested Development series. She is also featured as a voice actress in the Archer series. Those are the two things that I know her best for right now.
She has basically
the same role.
You're right. They are kind of the same role. What was that, Mark?
PCU.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she's the president of the university. She plays it brilliantly.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
So
if you could take her character from Archer, like if you could create a real version of that animated character and put her into the character of Mrs. White, it would be it would be perfect.
Which is essentially Lucille Bluth. So that's
right.
So yeah, if to get a sense of where I'm coming from, watch Arrested Development. Do yourself a favor, watch it from start to finish, and you'll see where I'm coming from.
And then start it over and watch.
And then start it over and watch it again. Yep. And then
lather, rinse, repeat.
Man, oh man.
So that's a good one, Andy. I like that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
Mark.
All right. Well, my pick for Mrs. White, I think, was a little bit left field, but I'm hugely charmed by it, so I'm gonna roll with it. My pick for Mrs. White is Lisa Kudrow.
Oh wow!
Oh, okay.
I like it.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that goofiness that she's known for is, I think, just gonna work wonders when. Wrapped up neatly in a nice suit at a fancy dinner party.
Yeah, she had a guest appearance. I think it was the show Cougar Town, just because Courtney Cox is on that show, and she plays a doctor on that, and she's just an awful, awful woman. And I think that would translate well to the role of Mrs. White because it was so hilarious.
Yeah, I can never imagine her being anything but funny. I mean, she's played her share of serious roles. Like, if you guys haven't seen this movie called Paper Man with Jeff Daniels and Emma Stone, Lisa Kudrow plays a doctor and the wife of Jeff Daniels' title character, and she's kind of workaholic and kind of uptight and straight laced, and even then she's still a little bit funny. So
I've not heard of that or seen that, so I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Everybody go watch that right now. Right now.
We'll be back in a couple hours.
Do-do-do-do. And we're back.
Yeah, Lee, I'm going to make you stay here while they watch a movie so you can tell us about your pick.
All right. Well, Mrs. White is my favorite character from the movie, and it's really, really tough to think of anyone other than Madeline Kahn for this role because she just brought so much life to it by playing kind of a walking corpse. But I just thought she was brilliant. And it's, you know, whenever I quote the movie, it's usually Mrs. White lines. So you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
But I went with an actress who's right now doing equal parts comedy and equal parts like a more dramatic role. She's on two different series. And, you know, this is my favorite role from the movie, so I picked my current favorite actress, who is Alison Brie.
Oh, nice.
She's on Community and she's on Mad Men.
She had a big role in the 5-Year Engagement. She was hilarious.
Yep. And she is hilarious and she's really versatile. She can do anything. She can sing, dance, and act. And I think she can be absolutely ice cold when she has to be, like, just like Madeline Kahn. And I think she could really pull off that really subtle comedy as well.
Lee, that's one of my favorite picks of the night.
Thank you.
Nice. So was she the sister in 5-Year Engagement? Is that?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
And after seeing that, I could not figure out if she was American or British. I had to look it up.
Yep. But she does really well on the show Community, and she's a big reason why I like that show so much.
Nice.
But,
good pick.
Thank you. Kyle, you're next.
Yeah, so this is a second time mentioned for this particular actress this evening, and it's for much the same reasons as before, albeit for a different character. I went with Julianne Moore. You know, I think she has such a specific energy to her that I think would just capture what Madeline Kahn did and the energy that this character has, like very menacing. You never quite know what she's about to do, like that kind of like that stealthy, silky, like just walking around, like she kind of hovers. It's like the nuns in the Blues Brothers. Like she just kind of hovers around, you know, it's like she doesn't even move. All of a sudden her just blank face is there and you're just terrified and you don't know why. So it's like the moment you see her, you know, she's off from that. And I think she could deliver that uneasiness and that uncertainty really well. So I went with Julianne Moore.
That's a nice one.
Very nice.
Thank you. All right, so for Mrs. White, originally played perfectly, I must say, by Madeline Kahn, Jared chose Tina Fey, Andy chose Jessica Walter, Mark chose Lisa Kudrow, Lee chose Allison Brie, and I chose Julianne Moore. And finally, the last role of the night is Wadsworth, the butler. Andy, tell us about Wadsworth.
Wadsworth buttles. He buttles very well indeed. He likes to keep things tidy. He is a gracious host, yet he knows more than he lets on. This role was brilliantly played by Tim Curry in the original, and I think he, along with perhaps Madeline Kahn, he made this movie, I think, what it was. He was the glue that held it together and also the engine that kept it running. And man, these were big shoes. This was probably one of the hardest for me to cast as well, just because his comedic timing, his ability to keep up with the dialogue and actually probably set the pace on the dialogue a lot of the movie. It's so fast that if you're not paying attention, you've missed 4 or 5 jokes.
But one of us wasn't here. No.
No.
No. Maybe one of us was murdering the cook. Who wasn't here with us?
Do you know?
I do.
While we stood here trying to stop Yvette from panicking, one of us could have stayed in the study, picked up the dagger, run down the hall, and stabbed the cook.
Just like that. So, the person that I chose for this is another British actor who I think has the demeanor of a good butler. I think he could play that very well, but also has a little bit of the impish air about him that he maybe has a few secrets of his own. I chose Michael Sheen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Michael Sheen. It's so hard to go from president to butler, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Hey, you know, bigger leaps have been made. For those of you who don't know Michael Sheen, he was in Frost Nixon. Go ahead, Mark.
Sounds a lot like you're talking about Martin Sheen, but...
Oh, I had my Sheens mixed up.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Like, wait a second there.
No.
I thought you were...
Frost v. Nixon.
No. Oh.
Phenomenal. Oh, in that.
Apologies. I had my Sheens all mixed up.
Come on.
We all do that. We all do that.
At least you didn't go Charlie Sheen. but he was in Frost Nixon. You're right. He played Frost.
So good.
He was brilliant in that one. He's also in the Tron Legacy remake as Castor or Zeus.
I hated him in that movie, though. Man, he drove me nuts in that movie.
Well, see, I loved him in that one, actually. I thought he played it. He was just... I think that was the point that you hated his character. Like, he was so kind of slimy a little bit, if that makes sense.
He was interesting and no one else is interesting. I just really didn't like the way that he was interesting.
Okay.
It just kind of bugged me.
Well, he doesn't like you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack it.
It's okay.
He is brilliant in The West Wing and I love the Mighty Ducks is what I'm trying to say.
Really, in Tinkerbell and the Great Fairy Rescue is probably one of his best pieces. But so anyway, Michael Sheen is my choice for this role. Jer, your ball.
Thank you. That is a great pick. It's 98% of my pick. Again, was looking for somebody that is going to play. Somebody's going to make a believable butler, but then when everything starts coming unglued, he's going to re-glue it. He's going to keep this thing running. He's going to be the engine that just drives this movie forward, both from a dialogue perspective and just from a physical perspective, where Tim Curry was flying from room to room and moving people and just being the whole driving force for the movie for the second half. And so I went with Eddie Izzard.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
I think could play both the very uptight butler, but then when it all came crashing down, he is going to just go a little crazy and keep this frantic pace going. And I would pay a lot of money to see that.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
As would I. Yep. He can do anything, really. I've yet to see him something wrong.
Yep. It'll happen someday, but probably not in our lifetime.
Even in something kind of throwaway, like his role in Mystery Men, I thought he was really interesting in.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. And his voice acting in the Narnia movies,
mm-hmm.
as Reepa Cheep, which is one of my favorite characters from the mm-hmm. books, but he just does that remarkably well. I guess he was only in the second one because Simon Pegg replaced him in the third one, but that's neither here nor there, I guess.
Spoiler.
I know. So... That's my pick, Eddie Izzard. Brilliant stand-up comedian, very British, very very posh, but also very, very funny. Mark, I will sort of underhandedly throw the baton to you.
For me, a lot of the, you know, aside from the brilliant writing, a lot of the comedy in Wadsworth characters with Tim Curry trying to maintain composure. And keying on that, I went with Ewan McGregor.
Hmm.
You know, in addition to being a fantastic actor, incredibly versatile, he's also really, really funny. And I can see him, you know, just trying to keep things together while being frantic. And I don't think that word came out right. Frantic. There we go.
Different than framptic, which is something that only Peter Frampton does.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got that patented, so I think we owe him about $20 now.
Oh, great.
Yeah. We've got a little slush fund. It'll be okay. Yeah.
It'll be a little bit more each time I say framptic.
Stop it.
One more time and he shows up in our bathroom. Isn't that how it works? Isn't that the Bloody Mary thing?
Give me my money. Yeah, or we get transported to his magical realm via giant inflatable pig.
Was that backwards Frampton there, Jer?
Oh,
mouth
boy.
Guitar. It was mouth guitar.
Sure it was.
It was good. It was talk box Frampton, all right?
We should probably just move on, huh? So yeah, I picked Ewan McGregor.
Yep. Ewan's always good. Same thing where I don't think there's nothing I've seen of his that I didn't like.
He was definitely in my running for that pick. Mm. I did consider him.
He's the next Sir Alec Guinness. In that he can do anything.
Yeah. And he's in my estimation the only one who could have replaced Sir Alec Guinness.
Yep. Agreed.
Hmm. I agree.
Hey, Lee, it's to you.
Well, this was another tough one. This whole cast was tough for me to cast, really. But I focused a lot on the energy that Tim Curry brought to the role. That's what stuck out for me. So I went with Robin Williams.
Wow.
Just because I think he has the energy. I would like to see him dial it down a bit. Not, you know, go so over the top that he's known to do, but temper all of that with his performance in Awakenings, where he plays a doctor who is almost humorless, but just, you know, do his thing, but do it, I guess maybe a little bit of less is more.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely very, very good, very convincing when he's not freaking out.
Yes. And I think, you know, in terms of energy, that won't be a problem for him.
That would be...
Yeah, it's... Oh, go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say that I feel like he would dominate an ensemble. But if he could truly dial it back, as I agree, Lee, in roles such as in Awakenings, you know, he certainly wasn't what most people would have expected of a typical Robin Williams performance.
Right.
So... But that's, you know, at the same time, you don't want to go so dialed down that he is humorless and, you know, this role obviously requires a lot of humor. So it would be interesting to see how he would do that, you know, to really play to his strengths, but not be such that he rules the screen and everyone else is kind of in his shadow.
I think it would be a good challenge for him. But also I think Tim Curry in a lot of ways carried the original cast.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah. But Kyle, who did you have for Wadsworth?
Well, I just pulled a last minute audible because thinking about my pick, I hated it. So I'm gonna flip it up a little bit here.
I want to hear the original pick. I want to hear it.
Okay. I will do so after I announce mine. So I wanted to again capture the energy of Tim Curry and you know he somehow kept it all together, which I don't know how he did it given the amount of lines that he had, the amount of running around he had to do. He is truly a remarkable actor. I don't know how he does what he does, but really no one can do what he does. So it's just a matter of finding someone that can do something similar and respect the role. But as far as energy and sort of the essence of the character, I went with Jude Law. I think he's got the gravitas of the butler type. You know, he can be a little bit sinister and he can also carry himself in that energetic way. A little bit different than Tim Curry, but I'm okay with that. But I I think that he could really, I think he could throw himself into it and do very well with it.
Wait, is that your changed pick or is that your original pick?
That is my changed pick, a-hole.
Okay. Then I like it. I like it a lot.
Oh, I thought I was supposed to be muted there. Did something come out?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
Cool. No, that's actually, I thought about Jude Law, especially the Sherlock Holmes movies, where he does kind of play a little bit of a comic relief type of character in those roles. You can definitely see some very good timing, especially in his interactions with Robert Downey Jr. So I did consider him too, and I could definitely see that as him doing comedy that way.
Gotcha. So the person that I had originally chosen, my poor pick was Clive Owen, and he's not a terrible pick.
I just peed myself.
Yeah, excellent. Not again. Yeah, I thought about it because of his performance in Shoot 'Em Up. I don't know if you guys saw that. It's basically a live action Looney Tunes movie. Quite literally, like he munches on a carrot the whole time, and so he has a ton of energy in that. But what made me decide to change it at the last minute was his voice.
It was the fact that he was Clive Owen.
Yeah, I actually think Clive Owen is a pretty astounding actor. I think he's really, really good. For what he's a good fit, and I just don't think he's as good a fit for the type of emotion. I think physicality-wise, I think running around, he could do that as shown in Shoot 'Em Up, but I don't think his face can be as expressive and his whole self can be as expressive as Tim Curry could or Jude Law or any of our picks. So yeah, that's the reason why I switched it. And the booze were deserved. Choice. Thank you. Thank you.
You made a wise choice.
Thank you. You chose wisely. All right. So in summary, the role of Wadsworth, originally played by Tim Curry. Andy chose Michael Sheen. Jer chose Eddie Izzard. Mark chose Ewan McGregor. Lee chose Robin Williams. And I chose Jude Law in a last minute audible. So that is all of our major picks. So usually we dive into our minor characters here, but because we had so many major characters, we're going to leave that until the next time. So we will certainly do our voting with that in mind, but we will come back to you on March 11th, where we will be talking about our minor character casting picks, as well as the plot and filmmaking changes we would make to Clue and just general discussions about that. Reminder, you can find out more information about this podcast and others on the Math is Hard Network at mathishard.net. You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/mathishardnet and on Facebook at facebook.com/mathishardnet. So definitely hit us up and let us know what you like or don't like and how we're doing. Gentlemen, as always, this is a real joy and a real blast. So thank you for that. And may the force be with you.
And also with you.